Coincidence? Connecticut Republicans and Fairfield County residents say, I don't think so. So there was a New York Post article that was just released this week, and it questions the new affordable housing bill that just passed during a special session last week here in Connecticut. The question is, does it effectively create a better housing situation for residents in our state? Or did it just get the green light a little too soon and ultimately benefits more our neighboring state of New York? We have State Senator Jason Perillo here. And Senator Perillo is the representative for Connecticut's 21st district, which includes Shelton, which I think is an important part of this conversation, which we'll get into in just a moment. Senator Perillo, welcome back and talk to us about it sounds like the GOP is especially sounding the alarm about this in Connecticut.
Yeah, well, good morning, Melissa, and you're right. The issue of affordable housing exists. We want people to be able to stay here in Connecticut. I completely get that, and I understand it, and I respect it. But it can't be done, A, at the expense of local zoners and decision makers and local residents. And B, it's actually got to be done in a way that benefits all communities. And quite honestly, that's really not what happened here. And I think this is sort of the point of the New York Post article that you referenced. We really had an opportunity to help redevelop our center cities with a bill aimed at increasing access to affordable apartment rentals. And instead, we haven't done that at all. I look at, and you mentioned Shelton, I look at applications for affordable housing in the town of Stratford as well. In many cases, multi-story, very dense apartments that honestly probably don't really need to be there. How nice would it be to actually have those housing opportunities, for example, right in Bridgeport, near the train station, near the transportation center? I mean, we're seeing some of those apartments being built now, and that's great, but I would much rather create a more robust housing market in those areas where, quite honestly, we're trying to redevelop. We're trying to rebuild downtown Bridgeport and that area of the city. And when you push dense apartment buildings into suburban areas, it doesn't help that effort at all. In fact, I would argue it hinders it.
So it's interesting, Senator Perillo. The reason I thought it was significant to bring up your district, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, is before this bill passed in the special session, we tried to speak with everybody who had any kind of a hand in this, including CCM, which represents basically every municipality, having the leadership from those municipalities at the table, talking to the governor, working through this. And they were excited in saying it was a much better piece of legislation than what ultimately was vetoed by the governor over the summertime. And there was also a press conference where local leaders also praised this legislation. And you mentioned Stratford, and I mentioned Shelton because I have not spoken to the, well, at the time, mayor of Stratford, Laura Hoydick, but I did talk to Mayor Mark Loretti of Shelton, and he specifically called out people like you and saying that the problem is that when people go to Hartford, they're not willing to negotiate. Just want to play a quick snippet of that when I had asked him if he's talked to any of you about this legislation that he is for, by the way.
You see, that's the other part of the problem is that once these people go to Hartford, they become separate. They don't there is no local dialogue.
What do you think about that?
Look, reasonable people can disagree on legislation, right? That's okay. We all have that right. I know that Mayor Loretti was supportive of this affordable housing legislation. I know that Mayor Hoydick was as well. They're smart people. They can reach their own conclusions. I would simply say this. I live in my community. I'm deeply engaged in it. There is no separation here. My job is to vote in the best way that I can to represent the needs and desires of the residents I serve. And if that means taking a hardline stance on legislation that is not good for our communities, like the bill that was just passed out of the House and Senate that the mayor seemed to like, then I am going to do that. I'm going to take a hardline stand because, sure, sometimes there's room in the middle. This bill went, and I know the mayor said that this is an improvement. I would say this bill went from an F to maybe a solid D, D minus. It's still a lousy piece of legislation. And I don't want to be part of voting for a lousy piece of legislation. Because if nobody stakes a position on one side of an issue, the middle moves further and further to the other side. Somebody's got to fight. Somebody's got to stand up and say, no, this is not good for our communities. And I am more than happy to do that. And quite honestly, if the mayors don't like that, I respect it, but tough.
A decision that was made here in Connecticut last week is making news in New York. The New York Post, with this recent article, "Beware false affordable housing fixes. New Connecticut law hides a socialist wish list." And as you read through this article, it talks about some of the concerning language in this new affordable housing bill. Just to take a snippet from it, the article says, "This isn't about allowing one apartment building in a town of single-family homes. Up to 20% of a town's housing will have to be, quote, affordable rentals, end quote. The bill even forces towns to let the homeless sleep in local parks or camp on sidewalks, despite the risk of crime and disorder." It says further down, "To accommodate new apartment buildings, towns will, with mostly single-family housing, will get clobbered with huge costs to install sewers and water lines and to add transportation and school capacity. Home ownership will actually get more out of reach." And it continues by talking about how this really correlates or aligns with the new leadership, especially in New York City. So we've got State Senator Jason Perillo here, and Senator Perillo at the local level, the municipality level, I'm wondering if since the bill was finally released, because lawmakers in Hartford didn't actually see the full bill until the session started, has there been any change from local leaders like Mayor Hoydick or Mayor Loretti?
Not that I've heard of. And, I don't know whether they read the bill or not, but in fairness, it was released very, very late, which is sadly not uncommon. But you mentioned a couple of things from that New York Post article that I want to sort of take separately. The first is the issue of affordability. I actually think it's a very good point. When you force the development of high density apartments in communities that don't have the infrastructure to support it, and by that I mean, like you said, roads, sewers, school systems with the capacity for new students, that does actually drive up the cost of living. It's just the reality. We already have a property tax problem here in Connecticut. It's just going to drive local property taxes up and make it more expensive to own a home here. That is simple economics. There's no magic behind that. The other thing that you mentioned, and this is sort of near and dear to me because I've spent a career in healthcare the last decade in mental health and addiction. When we talk about making public parks and sidewalks sort of homelessness friendly, I don't know if that's even a word, but when we make it easier for the homeless individual to set up camp in a park, that's not solving a problem. Because if we really want to get serious about homelessness, we have to get serious about funding mental health, funding addiction programs. Those are, many studies show, most studies show, those are the primary drivers of homelessness. Mental health facilities are grossly under reimbursed here in the state of Connecticut, both by insurers and by Medicaid. There aren't enough beds to get people the mental health treatment that they need and, quite frankly, deserve. And that is actually how you tackle homelessness, not by making it such that it's easier for an individual to sleep on a bench at night. I guess it all comes from a good place, from a good heart, I suppose, but it's just terribly misguided. And if we really want to help people, we got to stop and think about it and say, hey, how do we really change this person's life for the better? We do it by giving them access to the mental health and addiction care they really need.
So there's a couple of things with this, Senator Perillo, that to me is not really a partisan thing. To me, as just a resident, a taxpayer, somebody who loves calling Connecticut home, as a Connecticut native myself, the more that I have looked at what happened last week, I'm left with more questions than I am answers. But I'm going to just kind of prompt them at you. I have three questions in particular, and I've asked now both sides of the aisle about it, and I can't really get, especially from one side of the aisle, I can't really get a concrete answer on it. First of all, why was this done under emergency circumstances? I mean, it does make me question why this was done also after elections were done, also around the time that Governor Lamont announced he's running for a third term. Why was this under emergency circumstances? Why not just wait? I mean, what is really effectively going to happen in November, December, or January that couldn't wait until February and make this the top priority during the 2026 legislative session? That's my first question.
I mean, the one-word answer to your question is politics, right? I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This is certainly an issue that could have waited until next session. It would have given the public to have more input into the proposed language. In fact, not more input, any input, because there wasn't any to begin with. And to your issue of timing, yes, a vote was held after the local municipal elections because no one party wants this issue hung around their necks walking into election day. As to why it was timed close to the governor's announcement that he's seeking a third term, in fairness, that's a question for him. I don't want to answer that for him. But yeah, this was a political decision to rush a bill forward without any input. Bills that were voted on in the House, I think, after midnight, and in the Senate, of course, after midnight as well. There you go.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. I mean, it does lead to my next question, which is this just checkmark legislation that essentially will not get changed, much like the police accountability law or our marijuana law or our gambling laws? You know, things that this was a great framework, something we needed to pass, something we needed to do right now. And don't worry, every session we're going to look at it, rework it, tool around with it. But that's never actually happened.
Well, I mean, if the state's history on affordable housing legislation is any indicator, then yes, it's going to be a bad bill that stays a bad bill and it doesn't get changed. Our affordable housing statutes for decades, what a lot of some folks will know is 830G, have been an absolute failure when it comes to creating affordable housing units here in Connecticut. Yet it went unchanged and unchecked for decades. So am I hopeful that, in the early stages of this, we're going to get feedback as a legislature, feedback from towns and cities and communities that, hey, this isn't working. Hey, there's no way for us to ever get to 20% affordable housing stock. You know, I'm hoping we'll get that feedback because I think that's the feedback that's out there. But is our legislative Democrats going to be interested in changing the legislation because the feedback they get is that it doesn't work? You know, history indicates probably not.
Well, and you mentioned what was my third question. Why wasn't, yet again, 830G even touched? You've got a 100-plus page bill, and 830G is not touched at all.
Well, and it's interesting. If you look at 830G, and talking about my district, I think Shelton and Stratford are great examples of how developers have sort of perversely manipulated our affordable housing statutes to get what they want. Because at the end of the day, you know what developers don't want to do? They don't want to build affordable units because they don't make as much money on them. But they use sort of the hammer of the state's affordable housing statutes, which basically mandate zoning commissions to approve affordable housing units. They use that as the backdrop to essentially strong arm local zoning commissions to approve very dense residential apartment complexes, multi-story in the Orinoke area of Stratford. There are multiple applications and the town is fighting them tooth and nail. There have been many applications for apartments in Shelton, built at market rate, but the only reason they were built, these are hundred unit complexes. The only reason they were built and approved is because the developers had that hammer of state affordable housing statutes, 830G, to back them up. So how you can, in good conscience, change all these affordable housing laws, as Democrats have done and as the governor intends to do, and not address an absolutely failed system in 830G is mind-boggling. And that's one of the things that we brought up, I think. You know, that's one of the things, quite honestly, I believe that the municipalities brought up. And you know, just and, you know, to your point, Melissa, and you've been at this a long time, just another missed opportunity to do the right thing, in my opinion, in the interest of political expediency.
Well, we'll see what the governor decides to do. I know he's already hinted that he would pass this, but we've seen him veto legislation before, and specifically housing, and we'll see if he does it again. I do know there's a push specifically from CT 169 Strong, based in Fairfield County, which was one of the biggest reasons he vetoed the first go around. They have an online petition, and it is garnering an awful lot of support, urging the governor to veto the legislation and continue working on it during the regular session, which would start in February of 2026, which, by the way, you can find that petition at ct169strong.org. Senator Perillo, we'll see what happens, and I thank you so much for having this conversation on WICC always. Thank you so much.